What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Darkcast Network. Bringing our indie podcasts out of the shadows.
Over the winter slopes of the Ben Nevis landscape, a solo crow flies high, velvety black with a tint of blue on her wings. She swoops through the open, cloudless skies. She glides and caws, her striking song, and hears it echo through the mountains. As the crow flies, she covers vast amounts of the slumbering earth, where the streams appear vein-like next to the bare trees, stretching and entwining around the bracken and the heather. Most animals who roam this land are deep within the ground, wintering and waiting for the frosty edge to take leave, to give spring its first golden breath of life. A few animals that do roam are the ones equipped for the harsh colds of dark winter, whose fur is of great depth and keeps them well. As she flies, the crow's hawk eyes wonder to see a lonely mountain fox chewing on the remains of a used-up animal. He looks up, startled, and begins to run. A few flaps later, she passes a wise, wandering lone wolf, skulking through the boulders of the mountain's past. He is hungry as he drinks from the rushing, refreshing silver stream, and the crow feels the connection. The wolf, he knows how to conserve his energy. Known to some as a pathfinder, he has survival knowledge of his ancestors who roam this land, and a nose that he can count on, and an inner knowing that today is the day something will shift. The crow's flight bends around the rocky landscape further, and a few moments later, she flies above the old woman, walking slowly over boulders with a staff made of the sturdiest elm. It is adorned with shells, hagstones and runes. She wears a dark cloak with a hood that her white hair falls from, and boots of fur keep her feet healthy on this land. Her weathered hands are cold to the touch, but this is not a worry, for inside her heart beats the blood of her ancestors, and that keeps her magic true. The old woman stops walking and looks up as the crow passes overhead, and the bird hears her mutter something under her breath. A kind of acknowledgement of the passing crow, a nod that says, "I have been expecting you." The old woman takes a moment, head facing the sky, and lets out a deep sigh. "She is almost here," she whispers to herself. The old woman is tired. She walks these landscapes throughout the dark months with only the wild spirits of this land, and perhaps the next land too. Her staff of mighty elm has been with her most of her life, and holds great magic and wisdom within. The hanging assortment of amulets clatter and ring-like chimes as she walks. The staff branching out higher than herself, reaching the skies above her head, is one that she can rely on. She carries a cauldron of steel like a basket at her side, full of her treasures, bread, and a vessel for water which she filled with the permission of the running stream that travels by her side. People call her many names: the Wise One, the Crone, the Hag, Grandmother, and Witch. She is known as a cunning woman, a herbalist and a healer, a seeker and a wise one. Her name is Kalir, and she is the crone of the darker side of the year. She speaks to the stone, the bones of the earth, and sings to the waters that she follows. Kalir acknowledges the essence of the life-giving earth and prefers the company of the loyal deer, and often asks for the assistance of the wise owl and the trusted wolves of this land. She prefers the landscape that she knows so well to the everyday people that she encounters. The old woman would never turn them away, of course, but she knows where her allegiance lies. Kalir looks ancient and haggard to regular everyday folks in the village, who notice her deep wrinkles and milky eye. They sometimes fear her, as they would do a witch, but they also seek her out for spells and divining on life to come. The Wise One is patient and open to them. However, she knows the nature of the people who seek her counsel, and this she finds ironic, and it makes her chuckle to herself and the land that she walks with. A smile cracks on her face, a little shake of the head, as she puts one foot in front of the other. Her mind has wandered, but she must not be distracted from the journey before her. Her ritual every year at this time is a pilgrimage to the sacred stones. The old woman knows that the crow is a signal that her companion is almost here to walk beside her. Kalir stops to lean on her trusty staff as she feels the cold sleep into her weary body. She hears a faint whisper then on the gentle breeze. "Slow down, dear grandmother. It's almost time for you to rest." Kalir looks about her, not in surprise, but in relief. Another breath, visible in the cold air, becomes one of a brief dance of spirals, fading away as they spin. A sense of calmness fills the old woman's heart as she closes her eyes just for a moment, and then opens them to see a young maiden on the distant hills, crown of fire blazing on her head. As she gracefully walks, there is a wolf by her side and a crow above her head. The maiden walks towards the older woman, bringing warmth with her that radiates from her crown. Her gown of deep green velvet is vivid in the grey landscape and has embroidered ivy leaves that seem to move on their own terms. Her eyes are that of deepest blue. Her kind face is one of contentment and love. She elegantly stands in front of the old woman, only slightly taller, and lifts her hand to her, placing her soft palm on top. "Gentle now, dear grandmother of the earth, may I assist you to the sacred stones?" "You may," comes the reply, in a way that tells of acceptance, but also of the bark of a strong-rooted tree that sways in a storm. It's hard to fully understand how the voices of the women sound. It's how nature's seasons speak to the woods, and how the weather speaks to the wildlife in motions of time and space. Together they walk the last of the long journey to the sacred place of the landscape. The bare trees stand still on the grey, windless day. Notice them as they pass. The frozen earth that was glittering in the frost from the muted daylight is changing. And if you look close enough to the ground, the very first signs of spring are showing. The fine blades of grass poke through the soil from which they have been dormant for some time. The old woman's grip is tight on her staff as she walks. The once crunching landscape now becomes wet and soft, and the frost ceases to sparkle in the fading light. The snowdrops raise their blooms as the two women pass. The streams flow a little faster, and the crow is joined by a few other birds overhead. A robin and a magpie briefly dance in the sky. The deer watches intently from afar as they walk by, and the wolf is close behind. They walk through the night and converse freely without speaking words. The bright moon illuminates their well-trodden path. Love and respect the two women have for each other is the element that fuels this journey. And even though it's a challenging one, it is one that has to be done and had to be done many times before. At dawn, the stones appear on the skyline, their shadows stretching long on the earth as the rising sunshine of the first light dawns. This day feels different, renewed and full of hope. The women stand by the stones and place one hand on each side of the towering monolith. It is time for you to rest now, dear Grandmother Earth. I will take over and shepherd the land as she wakes from her slumber. The old woman smiles at the maiden and pulls off a stone from her staff. I feel her quickening, says the old woman as she looks down and observes the smooth stone in her hand. Her fingers trace the spiral encircling the hole in the centre of the stone. It is time, she whispers, her voice fading. The old woman passes her beloved staff to the young maiden, and as she does, the staff flickers in a flame so beautiful it brings tears to her eyes. She then turns to face the tallest monolith, the powerful bones of the earth, and places both her palms on its cold but reassuring surface. And she sighs one last time. Goodbye, dear grandmother of the earth, says the maiden, as she watches the old woman fade into the stone. Until we meet again when the darkness requests the land, I, Brigid, goddess of hearth and home, will keep her steady for you. And with that, she bowed her head to the standing stone, and a single tear ran down her face. And then she turned and walked back to the quiet hills of the Ben Nevis landscape. Now then, listeners, spiritual souls and beautiful people and witches all around and pagans that worship the earth, may I present to you a spontaneous episode full of positivity and the light to come. I had to do a proper positive episode because I know I said I was talking about AI and it is depressing me. And so as I meditate to sleep while doing Reiki, as I do pretty much all the time now, I had a bit of a vision of the goddesses coming together in the landscape with animals and standing stones, which you've just heard. And I got up this morning and I just had to write it down, and I've been working on it all day, and it's really inspired me to be hopeful and present in the moment, just accepting and doing what I could do. And so here we are, a spontaneous Imalk episode. A lovely little episode with some information about the Saba and the goddess Brigid, and we finish with a delightful ritual / recipe which can be used as an offering on the altar. I wonder if you can guess what the recipe is. If you've been following me on Instagram, you probably can. I'm aware the Bellwitch podcast hasn't covered any Sabbats apart from Yule at the moment because, if I'm honest, I'm not the most organised and I tend to miss them. But when looking at my calendar, it was like, oh my gosh, it's a Monday. This has totally got to come out on Imulk. So here I am. And perhaps this is the catalyst moment from when the Bellwitch podcast will be timely in covering upcoming Sabbats of the year of 2026. I mean, I've said it now, it's on audio. Please enjoy this spontaneous offering and may I wish you a beautiful, calm and content Imulk. May the fire keep you warm. Blessed be. Imulk is the beautiful pre-Christian Sabbat that happens midwinter between winter solstice of Yule and the spring equinox, also known as Ostara. In the northern hemisphere, it happens the 1st or 2nd of February, and in the southern hemisphere, it happens the 1st or 2nd of August. It is a traditional Gaelic festival that celebrates the awakening of the earth and the tiny, delicate seedlings planted with hope for the future. It is the first glimpses of the harvest to come. The crone aspect of darkness. Carliach. The name doesn't come easy to me at all, I tell you. I've googled the pronunciation about 5 times now, so I'm going to struggle with that. Blooming dyslexic brain is loosening her grip as the winter begins to thaw. Water moves under the ice and the delicate snowdrops raise their bright petals above the resting snow, and there is a growing glow of positivity and excitement for the sun's return. The word Imulk translates to in the belly and is thought to be connected with the early pregnancy of the ewes and their milk this time of year. It refers to the quickening of the land that is slowly waking up from a long, dark winter's slumber. In ancient times, after the harvest of Samhain and the ancient tradition of Yule, means around Imulk the stocks are coming to an end. Therefore, the sheep and the cattle are of great value, protected and worshipped at the beginning of the end of the dark season into spring and the summer. Fertility and femininity are celebrated as the quickening of the earth is the telling of the coming spring reflected in the rituals of history. Yes, Imulk is a Sabbath that invites us to be hopeful for the future but grounded in the present while being patient and observant. We're not totally ready to come out of our hibernation in the dark months, but instead we are stirring from our slumbers. Imulk invites us to connect to our surroundings and organise the year ahead. Feel the spirit of renewal after a time of retreat. The ritual of tending to our landscape, mothering our children and our friends, but most of all ourselves, and is to foster a sense of community, connection and celebrate with sharing the warmness of a lovely open fire. Of course, you cannot talk about Imulk without the well-loved Celtic goddess Brigid. It is thought that Brigid is one of the earliest goddesses and female deities to be worshipped by our European ancestors. With evidence from her beginnings in the Neolithic era and stretching through to the Bronze Age and the Iron Age prior to the arrival of the Roman Empire, goddess worship in general can be traced back much further to the Meso and the Paleolithic eras. Right, moving on. And it is likely to have been the first shared spiritual belief of the system of mankind. Yes, it is not a conspiracy theory to think that once men actually did worship goddesses and they were higher than gods, and all that jazz. I once bought a book from a charity shop about conspiracies, and one of the conspiracies was that men used to worship women, goddesses. Straight away, it went back to the blooming charity shop. I tell thee. I was like, okay, bye. I'm just going to mention the source. And I got that from the arishealing.co.uk. Thank you. I will add all the stuff I've read on the tinterwebs down there. Link it up on the show notes below. I have read a lot, I tell you. And this goddess has many names. Brigantina, the Celtic Brig, or the Exhalated One, later becoming a saint. Yes, Saint Brigid. The church were like, I want in, give me a piece. She is the daughter of the Dagda, the god that protects the landscape, and is one of the Tuatha Dé Danann. That's what Willow calls out, isn't it, in Willow from the 90s, when he's got the baby and he's like got his magic wand and he's calling it out to get rid of the nasty queen. I'm pretty sure he calls that out. I'm going to have to watch it. Oh, it's such a good film. Do comment if I'm right or if I'm wrong, please. I don't half get distracted. Her two sisters were also called Brigid and were associated with healing and handcrafts. The three aspects were traditionally treated as three aspects of the same deity, making her a classic Celtic triple goddess, which many of us are, of course, familiar with in the Mother, Maiden, Crone, and also the triple moon symbol. She was credited with bringing civilization to the Celtic people, and she was thought to be attended by an all-female priesthood. She is also allied with spring wells that gave fresh water to communities that used to worship the waters of the land. She is a complex and contradictory deity, as the Winter Crimers and the Order of the Bards and the Druids call her. She possesses an unusual status as a sun goddess, who hangs her cloak upon the rays of the sun and whose dwelling place radiates light as if on fire. Brigid took over the cult of Eos formerly held by the goddess Lassar, who's also a sun goddess, and who has made the tradition in the Isles from goddess to saint. In this way, Brigid's connection to Imolc is completed as the worship of Lassar diminishes, only to be revived later on in Christian sainthood. So it went full circle. Yes, she is a complex deity with many aspects to her. She is the goddess of poetry, of learning, silversmithing, midwifery, childbirth, and the patron of healers and magicians. Brigid is also credited with inventing the act of keening, the vocal crying and wailing performed after a death. Sometimes she denotes the feminine rage as a powerful goddess of war, a warrior that fights fiercely for her community. She will not be blinded by the lies and will stand up for marginalised people. She reminds me a little bit of the Joan of Arc. A badass warrior that fights for the people. But alas, is a balanced goddess in the fact that she's connected to two opposite elements, fire and water. But I get the gist that the water element is above the fire element, especially holy wells, the sea and the waterways of Ireland. She is a strong goddess to call upon when mastering the art of division. Not division, that is maths. Divination, for God's sakes, Wales. In all reflective surfaces and flame, and as an Irish deity of hearth and home, she is ideal for calling on to protect a household, a ritual in a mother blessing, and to leave offerings for exchange of a little luck in the midst of a hard exam. I think, actually, when I started my witchcraft path, I'd just finished doing a degree in silversmith and metalwork. An Imolc altar was the first altar I did properly. I remember putting my little anvil and a little jewellery mallet on my altar with some poetry, because them two things I've always been quite passionate about. And in the past, worshippers would leave ribbons or strips of cloth outside tied to trees to capture the morning dew, known as brat brides, translating to Brigid's green healing cloak. It was believed to heal the body and cure the fevers and alignments when placed on the body. However, I just want to insert here, I don't think this is a good thing to do anymore, especially with clothes being made out of 100% polyester and trash material that isn't organic cotton, which people used to wear. But then also the poor birds in the trees get frightened to death by ugly flapping bits of material tied to an empty tree. Perhaps you could make some vine or some twine from the nettle plant, which I've been seeing flying around on Instagram recently. Or perhaps just leave an organic offering at the tree. Proper party pooper. I'm just so aware of our impact. As pagans, we don't want to be impacting the earth anymore with old-fashioned rituals which didn't harm the earth as much as they do now because of history and the machine revolution and all that jazz. Bollocks to capitalism and bollocks to consumerism. Anywho, the doors of many a home were left open to invite the goddess within, and candles, which are a big deal this time of year, were lit to represent the growing sun rays of the upcoming spring. Brigid's crosses were woven from straw and left over doorways as lucky charms that represent the sun and the four elements of the earth. The ash of the evening's fire was said to be spread on the doorstep in hope to see a footprint the following morning from the goddess. That is a sign that the goddess has accepted their invite. And the year ahead will be full of fruition and blessed with the goddess Brigid's luck. I have been doing quite a lot of research on our lovely goddess Brigid. And imagine my absolute delight when I found Yorkshire connections to our goddess. In Northern England, aka good old Yorkshire, known as God's own country.
Yorkshire, Yorkshire.
There was once a tribe called the Brigantas. Their patron goddess was Brigantia. Or it could be Brigantia. I'm not quite sure. My dyslexic brain will not let me remember. Who is the British counterpart of our Celtic Brigid? A notable Irish scholar, which I cannot even say, something like Deathy O'Hogan or something, sorry, no chance, suggests it was immigration of some of the Brigantes tribe to the southeastern Ireland in the first century that brought the goddess to Yorkshire. The reason that we know about The reason we know about Brigantia at all is because something called Interpretatio something, Romano, God's sake, which was the practice of taking indigenous deities in the places the Romans conquered and then kind of blended them into their own deities. Luckily, there are treasures that whisper the history into our magical ears, such as ruins, monoliths, and their beautiful old altars. There are a few altars around the north of England, one at Adrian's Wall, and some in Yorkshire that are all dedicated to Brigantia. One being in Halifax and another in Castleford, which isn't too far from me at all. I do need to track these places down, if at all possible, to enter. There is even theories that Bridlington, the seaside town, is named after the goddess. Being a seaside town surrounded with healing waters of the ocean, standing stones and ancient spring wells that were once worshipped by pagans of the past are all dotted around nearby the east coast, and specifically Bridlington. The inscriptions on the ruins of the past give us some important clues about her. The inscription on Adrian's Wall altar, for example, refers to Brigantina as a heavenly celestial, which demonstrates that she had to be some kind of connection with the heavens. Oh, isn't that nice? In other inscriptions, she is also associated with victory, hence why we connect her to victory of war. Shall we look at the correspondences that go with our lovely Brigid? Think all things nature and the coming of spring. So we're talking about greens and whites. Green is for the growth underneath the soil, silver for the metalwork, and whites for the hope. She's associated with swans and wolves and lambs, and cows are her familiar. And plant-wise, think green, clovers, shamrocks and ivy. Reliable dandelion root and the dainty snowdrops are also associated, although it is considered quite unlucky to bring a snowdrop indoors, and perhaps it is a tad early for dandelions. However, photographs and illustrations will work just as well as the actual plants for the Imolc altar, especially of the snowdrop, which do really need to stay outside as they are poisonous. Hellebore and the rowan is the magical tree associated with Brigid. And her symbol is another one that I struggle to blooming pronounce. The triquetra. Triquetra, apparently, is how you pronounce it. Who knew? Probably a lot of you, actually. And then there's that other one, which is the triple spiral. That represents the three sisters, aka the triple goddess, the three aspects of the goddess. And then there's the very lovely Brigid's cross, which everybody knows and loves, and is one of those things that is a challenge to begin making, but when you get the technique, you're flying. I honestly have made many of Brigid's crosses, cross eye, because they're just so therapeutic and fun. The Celtic cross also represents this goddess because of the Celtic Gaelic origins. Let's have a quick look at what we can leave her on our altars as an offering. We can leave a nice glass of milk, bread, of the homemade variety, preferably, seeds and nuts, sheep wool, furs, vintage furs that is, don't be going out and killing any animals. And pillows and cushions, surprisingly, that can become a bed for her to sleep on should you invoke the goddess in for this Imbolc season. Invite her to come lay her head down and have a rest, like a sweet little fairy. This is just a brief run through, really, because there is a lot of this everywhere in books and online. It's really easily available. But I would say to work with Brigid, personally, I would walk through the woods, probably to a spring or a stream, and put my hand in the water and say a few words to the goddess, perhaps about requesting a hopeful future, some positivity in the post, what it could bring for the future, perhaps cleanse some crystals like rose quartz, clear quartz, obsidian for protection, and observe your hand within the running water and see how the liquid passes around obstacles. Empty your mind and gaze and observe, and perhaps be open to things that might just pop in your head. Also, while you're there in the woods, do you mind picking up a bit of litter and taking it home? Thank you, please. Plant seeds in the greenhouse ready for the season's growth, such as thyme, chives are quite good, potatoes, because them kind of things need a slow growth throughout the spring. And Imolc does invite us to be patient and think about the future and what we want without rushing into anything. Unleash your creativity and perhaps write a poem for the goddess. Stop yourself consuming on the internet and mindfully ask for Brigid to help, because it takes time and it's something you've created from the heart. Make an offering to the ducks in the pond, especially the swans. Feed the swans some peas or some bird food, sweet corn, preferably not shop-bought bread, because that is not good for the poor little duckies. Feed the swans and talk to them as if you're talking to the goddess. You can also partake in a little bit of spring cleaning. I quite like this time of year, because it is reflective of feng shui, which you all know I love. the art of moving the energies around your home to bring in good fortune and new opportunities in life. Ties in nicely with this time of year and the goddess Brigid, as she is inviting us to get our house in order and tidy up, clean the skirting boards, give the floors a sweep from front to back with your besom, clean the windows to allow the fresh and beautiful new light of spring to come flooding in. So yes, there is a lot of things you can do. Many are crafty, as she is a handcraft associated goddess. So if there's any plans you've been putting off, any projects you've been thinking about doing, or maybe a project you've started and not finished, now is the time to begin something or complete something that requires your hands, that's therapeutic and relaxes body and mind. As an offering to the goddess Brigid for this Imolc, I am planning to offer some bread that I have baked from scratch to put on the altar with love. If you follow the Bellwitch podcast on Instagram, you will know that for the last few months from September, I've been mastering the art of bread making, particularly with sourdough. Wow, who knew sourdough was this challenging to work with? Oh my gosh, I have learned at snail's pace. And that also ties in with Imolc. It is requesting that I am patient with it, and that I time it, and that I spend moments kneading it and let it rest and knead it and let it rest. And that can also be the case with regular yeast bread. So perhaps for Imolc, you can create a beautiful loaf from scratch, being mindful and taking time with kneading the bread, thinking of the goddess as you do so. So I will give you some ingredients now and encouragement to make your own bread as an offering. For this Imolc ritual, you will need 500 grams of strong white bread flour or wholemeal bread flour, 1 packet of yeast, 350 to 400 grams of water, and 10 grams of salt. And an extra, what I put in personally now, is 20 grams of butter and a spoonful of honey if you want something that's quite tasty, like a loaf of cottage-inspired bread. Get yourself a bowl, bless the bowl before you start using it. Add your flour. So I would usually do like 400 grams of white and 100 grams of wholemeal. Or if you wanted mostly wholemeal, I would do 400 grams of wholemeal and 100 grams of white. And then mix that together with a spoon, a silver spoon, to represent Brigid and her silversmithing. Add the yeast at one side of the bowl. The yeast can be a recognition of the growth and the quickening underneath the earth that is waking up. And add the salt on the other side. The salt can be for the protection and represent the salt of the earth. Try not to let them touch each other for a little while when you add the water. Slowly pour the water in using a wooden spoon or your fingers to combine the ingredients so it becomes a lovely sticky dough texture. Whilst thinking about Brigid and her sacred wells and waterways of the earth, it will look a little bit shaggy to begin with, but remember, this is about giving the space and the time to the bread dough to enable it to combine beautifully and slowly. Here you will spend 5 or 10 minutes folding one side into the middle, turning the bowl 45 degrees, and then another side into the middle, turning the bowl 45 degrees, and so on. And then leave the bowl to rest for 30 minutes to 1 hour, covering with cling film or a wet tea towel, and then come back to the bread and do a little bit more folding. This is where I add a spoonful of honey and or a little slab of butter. The butter ideally is room temperature and cut up into teeny weeny little cubes, like pea sized cubes, that are able to be rubbed into and kneaded into the resting dough until you can't see them anymore and they've combined fully. These two ingredients represent the coming of the sun, positivity and abundance, as well as good health and a sense of community in the honeybees which work together. Cover it once more with the wet tea towel or the cling film and let it rest for an hour or two until it doubles in size. Whilst you're waiting for this, you can grease a tin with butter so the loaf doesn't get stuck to it and preheat your oven to 180. Once there's been a noticeable increase in size, you can transfer your dough to the greased up tin, allowing it to settle there. It will probably lose a little bit of size because the gas has escaped on the way into your tin, but don't worry, leave it for another hour or two, checking it every half an hour to see if it's about to peak at the tin's height. Once it's done that, you can put it into the oven, wishing it well as it goes in and asking it to rise for you, to represent the quickening and the awakening of the earth. Bake for 20 minutes. If it's looking more bread-like and it comes out of the tin easily, take it out of the tin and put it in for another 10 minutes or less until it goes golden brown all around. If it doesn't come out very easily or at all, put it in for another 10 minutes, but don't forget about it. I know this from experience. Once baked and cooled, your beautiful and tasty cottage loaf can be cut up into slices and placed on your altar as a humble offering made completely from scratch for the beautiful Bridget of Imolc. Well done on your loaf of bread. Isn't it cool? You will get addicted to it, and before you know it, you'll be making bread every single day. There's just something so witchy about making bread, another surprise to me when I started. And now I can't help but make loaves all the time, and what's lovely is my family really appreciate it, and they always get eaten really quickly, and that fills my witchy heart with absolute joy. If you do this ritual, inspired by the Bellwitch podcast, please tag me on Instagram, or use the hashtag the Bellwitch Podcast to show me your amazing creations. I would love to see them and cheer you on for being a blooming brilliant baker and creative witch. Blessed be.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.